I'm a linguist, and I live on the internet. When I see the boundless creativity of internet language flowing past me online, I can't help but want to understand how it works. How did emoji become so popular so quickly? What's the deal with how people of different ages punctuate their emails and text messages so differently? Why does the language in memes often look so wonderfully strange? I'm not alone in wondering about these things. When I started writing about internet linguistics online, I quickly ran into more follow-up questions from readers than just another article could answer. I went to conferences and dived into research papers, and I ran a few of my own inquiries. I realized that in many cases, there were answers not just from an internet native speaker, not altogether in one place, not in a form that's fun to read, regardless of how much you already know about linguistics. So I wrote this book. So opens Because Internet, Understanding the Rules of New Language by Gretchen McCulloch. If you recognize Gretchen McCulloch, her name, maybe because she writes a column for Wired Magazine. Well, today's book is a great example of a book that is intriguing, helpful, and frustrating all at the same time. And that statement, as you'll come to hear, marks me as a semi-internet person, late to the party, but happily immersed in the fun and the horror of it all anyway. The topics that McCulloch urges us to consider in her new book show both the huge infiltration of the internet into our personal day-to-day lives and the surprising impact they are having on the way we write and express ourselves. The book is subtitled Understanding the New Rules of Language. She starts the book by launching into a short discourse about writing. And in part, she has this to tell us. When we think about writing, she begins, we think about books and newspapers, magazines and academic articles and the school essays, which we tried and mostly failed to emulate them. We learn to read a formal kind of language, which pretends that the past century or two of English hasn't really happened, which presents words and books to cut us off from the living people who created them, which downplays the alchemy of two people tossing thoughts back and forth in perfect balance. We learn to write with a paralyzing fear of red ink, and we're taught to worry about form before we even got to consider what we wanted to say, as if good writing were a thing of mechanistic rule-making rather than grace and verve. Naturally, we're as intimidated by the blank page as we are by public speaking. That is until very recently. The internet and mobile devices have brought us an explosion of writing by normal people. Writing has become a vital, conversational part of our ordinary lives. We write all the time now, and most of what we're writing is informal. Our texts and chats and posts are quick. They're conversational. They're untouched by the hands of an editor. If you define a published writer as someone who's had something they've written reach over 100 people, practically everyone who uses social media qualifies. Just make an announcement post about a new job or a new baby. It's not that edited formal writing has disappeared online. There are plenty of business and news sites that still write much like we did in print. It's that it's now surrounded by a vast sea of unedited, unfiltered words that once might have been only spoken. Well, I found that paragraph surprising and wanted to say, whoa, hold up there. Americans have been writing for many, many years, at least since the mid-19th century, when reading and writing became part of the expected tools most American children and parents were expected to have. Look at all the letters, postcards, office notes, school assignments we've all read from our parents, our grandparents, our friends, and of course, composed ourselves. But as McCulloch goes on to tell us, the internet is so pervasive, so inclusive, and so stimulating to us that we can't help but write more and more, albeit through our computers and personal devices, as she wrote. And so we're off to the races with her author, weaving a story as she goes further, rich with her academic discipline of linguistics, the study of language, and how the linguistics of the internet helps to explain how all those emoji, typographical artifices, and changing grammar rules affect our lives, and how we are increasingly changing how we communicate with others as well. Because Internet is fascinating, too, because her arguments can be so obvious once we're exposed to them. For instance, McCulloch talks with us about how easily we adapt to and understand the small written symbols that count on our shared sense of inference and our generalized, and often quickly learned, understanding of emblems and alphanumeric typographies. ST8 to the point, or this is character four, you, anyone? To give us a better understanding of it all, our author takes us back to the ancient ages of the internet and to the very rarely traveled 1980s when dot, dot, dot was one of the first of those alphanumeric typographies considered an expressive symbol that quickly caught on as ironic, as a thoughty form of expression, as more than just what it used to be, which was on and on and on and on and on. She spends quite a bit of time discussing our current use of how alphanumeric typographies have evolved in the past decade or so, and takes us into the emergence of a graphic, gesture-rich world of emoji, then leaps into the future, asking what will those of us using the internet be reading and writing 50 years hence, and how will those future internet denizens riff about how ancient those internet languages were popular in these days of the early 2000s. And speaking of internet history, McCulloch notes that there are already four periods of internet language development, or internet waves, as she calls them. There are the old internet people, not necessarily what you think, those who began using Usenet, forums, IRC, BBS, and listservs. The full internet people, those who came online when AIM, MSN Messenger, blogs, LiveJournal, and MySpace were all the rage. Then the semi-internet people, those of us who really came of age with the internet, with Facebook, with Twitter, with chat, with YouTube. And the post-internet people, have to have the post thing. The post-internet people, Instagram, Snapchat, iMessage, WhatsApp. Now, obviously, many of these waves of people overlap in their use of the internet. These historical waves, and I use the term historical very loosely here, are meant to help understand what the internet was like when a particular internet generation hooked up with life online, not a way of arranging folks by age or by interest. Perhaps, then, it's no wonder that other reviewers of this book, and there are many other reviewers of this book in addition to me, found Because Internet so worthy of comment. One particularly large group of reviewers of the book love the range and depth of coverage of the topics in this book, the enthusiastic tone McCulloch uses. For example, one reviewer of a certain wave generation was so thrilled with this book about the internet and the English language that it portends that she wrote, quote, "The first book I've ever felt was written for me, capital M-E, an internet kid of a particular microgeneration, interested in examining my online life with as much respect and rigor as we apply to traditional literature and academic studies. I loved, capital L-O-V-E-D, this book. I'll be buying copies for my dad, my little sister, and people of many ages in between." So, looks like many of us ought to be looking for Because Internet to appear on our gift table this holiday season. Others, mainly those not natives to the internet's language and culture, are more cautious in their praise, but praise still. An effect that reflects conversations I often have with friends and colleagues about this brave new internet-inspired world. As one of these more skeptical reviewers of the books wrote, quote, "I will confess that at times I am a grammar snob. Incorrect spellings, grammar, and punctuation drive me batty. It is different if I know the writer's mother tongue is not English. Then it is understandable. I have to remind myself that language has always changed, and that's okay. If it didn't, we would all still be babbling whatever syllables the first humans uttered." As Miss McCulloch says, quote, "The changeability of language is its strength," end quote. This book reminds me that language is in constant flux. That is its nature. Anything that is alive changes. A warning to readers. McCulloch often goes into the weeds deeply in Because Internet, which for me at least fogs the flow of the book as I'm reading it. even as she offers us research that is indeed interesting. Many times as I was reading, I imagined I was in the midst of a well-intentioned, highbrow magazine article that exploded as footnotes all over its main text. And by the way, if you're into footnotes, you'll find 40-plus pages of footnotes concluding the book. Lots throughout this book for anyone wanting to delve more deeply into these topics. But, as I noted, what appears to me to sometimes be a hodgepodge of writing in much of the book is seen as page-turning exciting by other readers who grew up enmeshed in the internet world. This book speaks clearly to many. By the way, more reviewers have written more about the substance of this author's arguments than in most any other reviewed book I can remember. And spoiler alert, though I always write my book review first, I do then seek out other reviews to pick up points I may have missed. Because Internet is one of the few books that have prompted me to read so many other reviewers' thoughts, they are as varied and as interesting as the book itself can be. Because Internet begins to put all the Sturm und Drang of the Internet into a good frame for understanding. And evidently, given the number and the enthusiasm of those other reviewers, as I've already noted, there are a lot of Internet linguist nerds out there who will delight in reading this book too. In sum, while Because Internet shows us there is plenty of room for more books about the Internet and the hows and the whys of our writing and communicating with each other. There are 40 pages of notes in this book, for instance. It is a good place to start as any. In the end, I hope you'll give it a spin. As I mentioned, our author Gretchen McCulloch writes the Resident Linguist column at Wired, and she has a master's in linguistics from McGill University, runs a blog, All Things Linguistic, and co-hosts a podcast that's enthusiastic about linguistics. She lives in Montreal, but also on the internet. Let's finish by reading from her concluding thoughts about the changeability of language and how the internet is yet one more chapter in the long story of person-to-person communication that began long, long, long before the internet was a glimmer in the eye of its developers. As she writes, "The changeability of language is its strength. If children had to copy exactly how their parents spoke in order for language to be transmitted, language would be brittle. It would be losable the way that ancient techniques for art or architecture can be lost. But because we remake language at every generation, because we learn it from our peers, not just our elders, because we can make ourselves understood, even though we all speak subtly different personal varieties, language is flexible and strong. When we thought of language like a book, perhaps it was natural that we were worried and careful about what we enshrined in it. But now that we can think of language like the internet, it's clear that there is space for innovation, space for many Englishes, and many other languages besides, space for linguistic playfulness and creativity. There's space in this glorious linguistic web for you." What a book. Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language, and really so much more, by Gretchen McCulloch. It's quite a read, and it's available at the West Lafayette Public Library.